Hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And I'm so excited today to introduce you to one of the world's experts on hair restoration, Dr. Alan Bauman. How are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Dr. K, I'm doing great. Great to be here with you.
So exciting. So hair restoration has, I feel like, evolved exponentially in the last 20 years. Tell us a little bit about what started you on your journey and why'd you get into hair and where is it evolving?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've come light years during the time that I've been involved in hair loss and hair restoration, which is over 25 years. But when I first got started in hair restoration, I was really in a path towards plastic and cosmetic surgery, and I didn't really know much about hair transplants at all. And probably like most people, I thought it was kind of pluggy and painful looking and all of that. And I didn't think it was really much of anything that anybody would want to be participating in, much less performing back in the mid-1990s. But then I had the opportunity to meet a patient who had had a procedure, and I was blown away. I was unable to tell that he had had the work done. And so a short conversation ensued, and he was telling me about the amazing physician that he went to and the techniques of single follicle implants. And even though at that time they were still doing strip harvesting, you know, the linear strip and converting that into grafts, his end result looked beautiful and completely natural. And that short conversation kind of opened my eyes into the possibilities of something artistic that I could do with my surgical skill, maybe in addition to the plastic surgery techniques that I was learning at the same time. And so it started my journey. I also remember vividly how he described that the hair was life-changing in terms of his social aspects and professional aspects. And it really seemed to make a big change in his career and social status. So I do remember how the emotional impact was for him as well. And so I started to look into it, you know, the usual way, maybe some journal articles and textbooks, and then eventually visiting physicians and going to conferences and learning about the latest and greatest in terms of the procedures and treatments. And so it seems like not that long ago when I first got things started, but obviously that really took over my career. In fact, I decided not to continue on with plastic surgery at that time, and I'm focused exclusively on hair transplantation. And so I moved to Boca Raton, Florida after all of that training in New York. I did a fellowship actually in hair transplantation, a mentorship type of program for about a year, and then opened my practice in Boca Raton in 1997. And since then, I guess my parents would say it's a 25-year overnight success. So in that time, we've treated over 30,000 patients, and I've performed nearly 13,000 surgeries and over 12,000 regenerative treatments and so forth. But it's really been an amazing ride, and I hope to continue for another 25 years because we have such a fun time, my team and I, in changing people's lives with hair. And I guess that's kind of the take-home message, that I didn't realize how emotional the hair follicle was as an organ, but it certainly, you know, makes an important improvement in the way that you feel about yourself and, of course, the way that people judge you as well.
Yeah, hair has so much psychological importance, and especially, I think, for females, even more so than men, but so empowering to have a great head of hair. But I have noticed with my patients, especially over pandemic, with increased stress and anxiety, so much hair fall concern. What are some common misconceptions about hair loss? And you know, what are kind of the things people should think about first when they're noticing thinning and hair fall?
Sure. So, you know, when hair loss is happening, it might be physical. You're seeing it, you know, in the brush, in the drain, you know, on your pillow, literally the hair falling out. And so sometimes that's the first sign. Sometimes you'll just see a wider part line. You might have less coverage of the scalp, and you've got to kind of, you know, do something different with your hairstyle. You might notice that your ponytail volume is decreasing, a decrease in volume, or you might notice changes in your hairline. So male and female pattern hair loss looks different. Male pattern hair loss you can see from across the room, a receding hairline or a bald spot developing in the crown. When it comes to female hair loss, we're talking mainly about loss of density through the frontal zone typically first, and then maybe a little bit of a recession. But primarily, hair loss is genetic. And so what I mean by that is that it comes through the family. It's inherited from your mom's side or your dad's side. Mm-hmm. But I think what people don't appreciate is just how much impact these lifestyle factors and other influences there are on that little hair follicle that's trying to grow beautiful, thick, and healthy fiber of hair.
I think you're right. I think my patients, especially in women, that the amount of androgenic alopecia that we're noticing is definitely increasing. And I don't know if it has to do with hormones in the environment or increased stress levels, but do you recommend that people start immediately with some kind of over-the-counter topical Rogaine, or starting with vitamins, starting with the blood panel? Kind of what's your sequence when you first have found it?
As you said, we're definitely seeing a lot more hair loss now than we ever did before. We're seeing it happen at younger ages, and whether that's more decrease in nutrients and fuel that of our intake, our food sources, if there's more stress, of course, as you mentioned, the pandemic, our exposure to biotoxins, everything from mold to microplastics, and even obviously, mRNA vaccines and the COVID-19 virus has knocked out a lot of hair, and we're seeing so much evidence of that, not just here clinically in the practice, but now it's coming out in the literature as well. So the hair follicle is a very, very sensitive organ to all of these things. And that's one of the reasons why evolutionarily, hair is a very important determinator of youth and vitality and fertility. It's because it's so sensitive to genetics as well as these lifestyle factors. So if you're first starting to see some hair loss, the last thing that you should do is panic and go rush out for some magic vitamin or lotion or potion. The first thing you should do is get an appointment with someone who is an expert. And now, an expert in hair loss today is not your typical dermatologist. And there's nothing against my dermatology colleagues. They got their hands full with cancer. They got their hands full with skin issues. But when it comes to the scalp, there's now board certification. There's hundreds of doctors now who are board certified in hair loss and hair restoration. And these are the folks who are uniquely trained 100% in hair loss and hair restoration. So a lot of my patients do start their consultations virtually. Obviously through the website, they can schedule that, or here in person at the clinic in Boca Raton, where we can obviously do some measurements in person and dig deep into what are these risk factors. So is there a genetic component? Is there lifestyle components? Are there nutritional aspects? What are you doing to style your hair and to care for your health of your scalp? These are all critical things that we need to look at. What are your medical issues? Are you on special medications? Are your hormone levels in balance? Are you adding hormones into your system, whether it be through birth control or hormone replacement therapy that could be dysregulating the hair? So there's a lot of things to get through when it comes to the risks of hair loss, and we're going to sort through all of that for our patients when they first come in. But it starts out with those underlying risk factors first. You have to talk to the patient. You have to get that information in order to start to understand the diagnosis of alopecia, which is the general term for hair loss. And there's a lot of different types of alopecia. But the primary things that we treat here in the practice at Bauman Medical would be male and female pattern hair loss. We also see autoimmune alopecia. We see traction alopecia, or hair loss from braiding or styling or extensions. And we see lots of other types of scarring types of alopecia as well, where the hair follicles are just obliterated and dead and gone. So there's a lot to kind of diagnose. So just running out for a bottle of Rogaine is probably not the best first step.
I think the use of extensions has maybe probably really accelerated female hair loss. I see so many patients taping, gluing, and like really probably traumatizing the hair follicles. Are there any kind of safe extensions when it comes to female hair?
Yeah, unfortunately not. And of course, I will never tell patients never to use hair extensions again. You can't tell them that. It's like even coloring and certain styling with mechanical tools and heat and chemicals and so forth can be damaging to the hair fibers and the hair follicles. But what we need to make them understand is that not every hair extension professional has your best hair health in mind. And so if someone has ever plucked an eyebrow and then wondered why it didn't grow back, you now know it's traction alopecia. That is the condition that you've destroyed the follicle by pulling or plucking the hair out. And unfortunately, there's different ethnicities will promote braiding at very young ages that are so tight that the kids need to take Tylenol because it's so tight and annoying. Hair extensions add that extra weight onto the hair fiber and pull on the hair follicle. And if you pluck a hair repeatedly or put too much tension on the follicle, it will scar and die eventually. And then you'll have no hair left to extend. That's
Thank
the bad situation. So if you're wearing hair extensions and you think your own native hair is thinning out, you're not imagining it. You need therapy, you need treatment for that. You need intervention. So it's okay to use extensions, but you have to do it carefully. Not overdo it. Not everybody needs a Hollywood, Dallas Cowboy cheerleader hair. So, just be careful on the length and the weight of those extensions, and you're gonna have to move them around to be careful and not to create too much damage. And you need to put a program with a hair restoration physician in place to protect and enhance your existing hair.
Now you have really nice hair. Have you got some good tips for nutrients that you need to be on, supplements? Are you doing LED red light therapy? What are sort of the, maybe top five things that the average consumer could bring into their home?
Yeah, so Dr. K, everybody wants to know your secret sauce for beautiful skin, right? And so everybody asks me about my hair. Well, actually, I'm at high risk for hair loss. So my dad was totally bald by my age, and he'd been bald for many de for a decade or two already at that point. My mom's father had extensive hair loss before he passed on, and so I have a genetic susceptibility tendency towards hair loss. I have a receding hairline and a thinning actually in the crown area. That we monitor and measure. And I've been paranoid about my hair for a long, long time. So you are right. I am a hair junkie. And so for the past 25 years, I've been doing all sorts of therapies and treatments. So, but let's start with, and that includes designing my own hair care products under the Bowman MD brand, my own nutritional supplement regimen called the Wellness System for Hair. We call that the Nutra Team. There's about six or seven different products there. I've helped the inventor of the laser cap reimagine that device as the turbo laser cap. And I've developed my own methods for PRP injections and things such as that, as well as obviously pioneered many hair transplant innovations as well. So, but for me personally, I think what's most important for somebody out there who has hair loss, they got to look at it kind of a hierarchy, right? And so it starts out with scalp health. If your scalp is dysregulated, and of course the microbiome of the scalp is something that we're really keen on examining and looking at. We're looking at the oil production at the level of the scalp. Is there inflammation, irritation, poor circulation? What's going on at the level of the scalp? Not only now, but also what's happened over time. Has it changed? And if there's dysregulation at the level of the scalp, it's not fertile ground for hair follicles to grow well. So we got to take care of that first. And then let's look at your nutritional intake. So there are nutrients and nutritionals. And I know you've done a segment on biotin. I'm a huge fan of biotin in our patients. And also other kinds of interventions like good protein intake, making sure that their probiotics are on point. And maybe there's different herbs and supplements that they could use. For example, ashwagandha for stress. Or curcumin turmeric for inflammation, or even saw palmetto for hormone imbalance. So there's a lot of different things that we do in the foundational way to make sure that your scalp health and nutrient and fuel system can provide good access, if you will, for the hair follicle for nutrients and fuel to build that hair fiber. Because the hair fiber is dead tissue, right? It's like your fingernail, but the hair follicle is one of your most highly mitotic or highly metabolically active cell populations in your body. In fact, there's some belief that the hair follicle is the most highly metabolic cell population in your entire body.
Wow. So when those hair follicles start shedding, that's definitely a sign that your telomeres are unraveling and you're getting those zombie cells and you're
Yeah.
losing,
So
your
those are
nerve.
the, yeah, for
Exactly.
sure. So you need some evaluation and intervention. Now, as we move forward into other things, you mentioned red light therapy. I'm a huge advocate for low-level laser or photobiomodulation. We have a variety of different devices, medical grade, not the Amazon garbage helmet that you see out there, but medical grade devices for that are FDA cleared for hair regrowth. And also, we have treatments in the office that are non-surgical, for example, PRP, platelet-rich plasma, PDO threads, exosome therapy, microneedling, mesotherapy. Those are all non-surgical interventions. And also, the latest and greatest TED-type treatments, which are the transepidermal delivery devices that we use in the office for improved hair growth. So, all of that is designed to basically give life support and stimulation to the hair follicles that might be failing as we reduce your risk factors. But if we discern that there are follicles that are dead and gone, then we need to talk a little bit about hair transplantation and how that might work. But we always work with the least invasive things first. We take a very holistic approach, Dr. K.
I think that's the best because otherwise it can be overwhelming to the average person. Like, starting with stress and nutrition, obviously that balances the human first. But let's back it up a little to red light therapy. Like you said, there's so many devices out there. Everyone's tempted. There is on sale at Costco now. And what, how can someone discern whether something has medical grade? Obviously you can look up their FDA clearance, but are there wavelengths of light that you recommend, certain patterns or amounts of light intensity? What devices are?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So we have a huge breadth and depth of experience in red light therapy. In fact, I got my first laser therapy device for the practice in 1999, imported it from Sweden, and I was desperate to disprove that the treatment could do anything because I had never heard of a red light doing anything at a cellular level, and boy, was I wrong. Wow, those devices that we had, we ended up acquiring a few more of them, obviously, over the years, many more of them. They grew a ton of hair. And they also helped our patients heal better after hair transplants and even rectify things like psoriasis and scalp dysregulation and so forth. So I've been a huge fan of red light therapy. And we know that the visible light has the best absorption and the best conversion to ATP production at the level of the hair follicle inside at the level of the mitochondria. So red light typically between 630 and 670 nanometers. Nanometers is the wavelength, that's the color, right? So 650 is a good number. Some of the original devices and FDA clearances were in the 630. Some, as you go higher, you can get a little bit more of an anti-inflammatory effect. But 650 is kind of a good general range. Now, devices that you see on the market for hair regrowth are like televisions. And what do I mean by that? Well, you could see TVs that you could buy for a couple $100 or a couple of $1,000. And obviously, you know that a $4,000 TV is not going to be the same as a $400 TV. It's just it's going to be light years different in terms of features and functions and resolution and you name it. And so the same holds true with other electronic devices like lasers. And so the high quality laser devices are typically going to be more in a higher price point. They're typically going to have more diodes, which means what? More energy at the level of the scalp. They're going to have more features and functions like portability. Maybe some of them will pack flat for travel. Some of them have shorter treatment times. And then you have other devices and companies that give you, let's say, a lifetime warranty. So those are some really basic ways. If you're looking at a device that's, $600 versus a $3,000 or $5,000 device, you have to know in your mind that those are not the same. It's impossible. One is a Chinese knockoff and one is the real deal, and it's not too hard to figure that out. All you have to do is hold them in your hand and you'll see the difference and put them on your head and really see the difference in terms of hair growth. So a lot of our patients, unfortunately, they'll say, yeah, you know what? I got that device at Amazon, Costco, whatever, and it didn't work for me. I'll say, wow, well, let's talk about that. Can you bring the device in? And it turns out that it's this little band that has like, a couple dozen lasers in it or diodes. Sometimes they don't even have lasers in them. They're just the incandescent bulbs like the LEDs that you would have on your old-fashioned VCR. And it's not even a laser diode. So, there's a lot of nuance. In the practice, we prescribe what we call the turbo laser cap. And I believe that to be the top device in the market. It's obviously won many awards, top hair restoration innovation from Ask Men and numerous other ones. Robert Port has recognized it. It's portable, it's rechargeable, it covers from the hairline all the way through to the nape of the neck. It has over 300 diodes, the shortest treatment time, exceptionally powerful output from those lasers. And they're pure lasers. So that device is my favorite. That's what I use daily, 5 minutes every night for my hair. And we've had great success. And I'm not the only one. People like Dave Asprey and other influencers, other very, very prominent people in the health and wellness sphere have used the turbo laser cap as the a primary device for non-chemical hair regrowth.
And is this a lifetime commitment? One of the things that scares people sometimes with hair is that if I start using Rogaine, I'm gonna have to use it forever. If I start using red light laser therapy, is this a forever thing?
Yeah,
Would you
kind of
stop
like you.
if you're gonna shed?
Well, I mean, look, you're in the beauty industry. Would you tell people that they should like, only use their, skin cream and treatments for a short period of time? No, of course not. My dad's a dentist, and he didn't tell people to use their toothbrush for 10 years and then throw it away. So these are things. If you're worried about your hair, and a hair is part of your identity, and you like your hair, And you know, some people are okay. If you want to shave it, great. If you want to wear a wig, that's totally fine too. And there's no problem. We do that in the office as well. We have cranial prosthetic devices for people who don't want their own biologic hair, and that's okay. If you can get away with a shaved head, man or woman, cool. But if you want your own biologic hair to be maintained over time, just like you want your brain function to be maintained over time, your muscle function, your skin tone and texture, your eyesight, you have to, your teeth, you have to take care of it. I mean, and unfortunately, nobody told you how to take care of your hair when you were 5 years old, other than how to shampoo it, maybe. But I'm the one that needs to tell people, now is the time, if you're thinning in your hair, now you have to take care of it. And so here's the way that we can do it. And there are very, very safe and effective ways to maintain your existing hair, and of course to enhance it as well. So don't lose hope.
Now let's talk a little bit about platelet-rich plasma, PRP treatments, and the injection treatments that we are doing in the office. So you mentioned PRP, then there's exosomes, then there's threads. So let's break that down into like, okay, PRP, how many sessions are you recommending? And what's any special preparation or best practices for what type of PRP?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure as you can, throw a stone from your office, probably knock out 12 people performing PRP. We're here in Boca Raton, Florida, the same. And so, but back in the early days, we're talking about 12,000 treatments ago and over 15 years, PRP was new in the world of hair. But it wasn't new in the world of orthopedic surgery. They were using PRP. People were traveling actually overseas, like Kobe Bryant had his treatments done in Germany and such at the time, because there was not too many orthopedic surgeons performing effective platelet-rich plasma here in this country. But today we have it, which is nice. So what I've learned over those years is that there's a very, very specific dose that activates the follicles and prolongs the effect of the PRP over a long period of time. So most dermatologists will use what I would consider a skin or wound healing PRP, which is a low density platelet PRP, maybe a test tube spinner, maybe a single spin with a gel separator tube. Those are the basic things that we started with many, many, many years ago. But over the course of years, we learned that there's a very specific dose of platelets that gets the job done, just like with any medication. We learned that the dose determines the result. And for platelets, there's a lot in the clinical literature now that shows that the effective dose or concentration of platelets is 1.5 million platelets per microliter. And if you don't measure how many platelets are in your PRP, then you're not going to know if you've reached that effective dose or not. And so not only do you need the concentration that's effective, but you also need the volume, right? Because if you had one drop of a million platelets per microliter, that's not going to be enough to treat your whole scalp, maybe an eyebrow, but that's about it. So we need about 7.5 cc's of PRP at the dose of 1.5 million platelets per microliter, which basically equates to about 10 to 12 billion platelets, if you calculate it out. And so that's my go-to treatment. It's a dual spin separation protocol, which harvests and maintains the full amount of platelets that we harvest from the blood that day. So we take a patient's blood and we put it in the Holter counter right at the bedside, and we know exactly what their platelet concentrate is. We tailor our mix or our preparation protocol to their blood concentration so that we get at the end the 1.5 million platelets per microliter. We then test the PRP to verify that we've gotten in that range. So, okay, if it's 1.3 to 1.6, we're in good shape. So that's
You're
our
testing
basic.
with the Holter counter.
A Holter counter. Yeah, we have a Holter counter at the bedside.
Okay, that's so nice. I've heard of
Yeah.
one other orthopedic company that tests PRP platelet levels too. I had done a podcast with them ages ago, but very few people test the amount of, platelets that are in the specimen.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, over the past 15 years, we've been able to correlate the dose, which is the amount of platelets in the treatment and the concentration, with the hair growth results. Because as we measure different areas for diagnostic purposes and to establish a baseline in the beginning, we can now know how each area is responding to treatment. And we use AI-powered microscopes. Sometimes it's iPhone-based hair cams. Some other types of microscopy and measurements are being used. At the office, obviously you can't do it virtually yet, but at the office, to quantify the amount of density you have in each area, to sort through how much hair caliber, what hair caliber you have and the variations thereof, and then also to track your results from the PRP. So we know that that single treatment with, let's call it 12 billion platelets, in our hands lasts 10 to 14 months of boost before it needs to be repeated.
A single treatment. Wow.
Single treatment, yes.
And are you recommending like 4 sessions throughout the year, or are you? I used to
No.
be, most of the articles I've read have said do 4 to 6 sessions to follow the hair growth cycle. I guess that's when you're using the weaker strength PRPs.
So what that illustrates is that the preparation protocol for that is a very low dose, maybe not even platelet-rich plasma, but like almost like a clear PRP. If your PRP is clear, I guarantee you have less than 1.5 million platelets per microliter. There's no question.
So if you're seeing
So,
that clear golden the PRP, then that's not enough. You're looking for more of a cloudy,
yeah. So
brown.
up to 1% hematocrit is okay. And remember that we also use leukocyte-rich PRP. So the leukocytes, for your listeners, those are the white blood cells. The monocytes are very, very much related to tissue regeneration and repair. And one of the things that a dual spin process enables us to do is preserve the monocytes within the PRP. So it's not just the PRP, but it's the monocytes there as well, which I believe are critical for the improvement in hair regrowth.
And so what, how many sessions then? You said you just do one. That's astounding to me.
Dr. K, it's a one session, now
Never
whether we combine.
heard that in our aesthetic literature anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we've presented on numerous occasions in the world of hair and hair loss.
Yeah.
Everybody, unfortunately, most people don't understand the dosing strategy of platelet-rich plasma. In fact, they don't even understand the definition.
That's
So
true.
I guarantee if you send out, like if you're doing a general spin, single spin process with a gel separator tube, and there's a thousand companies that provide these to dermatologists and plastic surgeons, you may be able to get good wound healing from that. But I will tell you that it's going to be, if you get some hair growth, it would be a miracle. And it'd be most of the time not so good. So if you send out that clear gold liquid and go get that tested, I guarantee it's less than 1 million platelets per microliter. I'll bet the count, it may even be less platelets than the whole blood. And
More
we've
or less.
done that testing. We've done that testing. Patient comes in with 250,000 platelets per microliter. We spin it in a gel separator tube, and then we put the clear yellow, quote unquote, supposedly PRP into the Coulter counter, and there's less platelet concentration in there. Where did those platelets go? Well, they went into the gel, and they are trapped there. So you have lost those platelets.
So the every meeting we go to, we see a new company popping up with a new spinning method and a gel separator and a special coating in their tubes. And then there's PRF on top of that. Are there some tubes or separators that you recommend? And then
100%. Yeah. So first of all, and this all got started. The reason why I bought the Coulter counter is because when we were featured nationally with our hair growth results with PRP back in around 2008 to 2010 at a national media level, I got inundated by medical device manufacturers who wanted to sell me a new, latest and greatest and better kit. And so today, if you are going to propose that I need to do a different process or kit, and you are a medical salesperson, you can come to the office, but just make sure you're hydrated, because what's going to happen is that we're going to take your blood and then we're going to test it in the Coulter counter to see what your platelet concentration is. And then you're going to use your kit to make the PRP. And then we're going to test that PRP in the Coulter counter again. And actually, that's pretty much shut down the influx of these single spin preparations, which again, might work great for healing. They might work great for lubrication if you're going to do some professional microneedling. But I will tell you that 9 times out of 10, they're not going to give you robust hair regrowth. And that's what you need. So you might be getting regrowth just from the traumatizing of the scalp every month that you're doing with PRP or platelet poor plasma. You might as well be using saline and just, injecting that. So the other concept I think that's, oh, so we use Eclipse. I mean, we don't use Eclipse. We use many other devices, but the main one is EmSight. So the EmSight is my favorite dual spin process. That's the main platelet harvesting device that we use.
Can you
And
tell
we get them from Integrative PRP is my number one provider of those kits and centrifuges, and they are an excellent partner to those who we teach and train. In fact, I have a PRP class, BaumannPRPClass.com, for those providers who want to learn the true methods of applying PRP. And what I found is that in visiting folks and watching their videos, how they're applying PRP, it looks like even if they've created a very strong PRP, many of them are applying it in completely the wrong area anatomically. They're putting it much too deep into the skin, and it's not even near the follicle. So, why they're putting it so deep, I don't know. PRP should be applied right at the level of the follicle. And so, if you're not clear on the anatomy, that's also something that we teach and train. So the application protocol and also providing a painless PRP is the other piece of the puzzle. I hear from so many of my patients.
Yeah, it's so painful. We've used so many protocols for numbing. What have you found to be really effective?
So we use a vibration technique first and foremost, but I also have robotic syringes if we need them, the mechanical AI-powered syringe. We also use a little bit of Pronox, and we create a ring block. Not a block in the brow where it's the most painful, but a ring block around the scalp in the periphery. Because if you're trying to stimulate hair growth, the last thing you want is a patient undergoing a severe amount of stress from pain. And so 9 times out of 10, if someone says, "Oh, I had this painful PRP and it didn't work," well, now we're starting to realize that the cortisol release from a painful PRP could potentially negate the effect of the platelet-rich plasma, because cortisol is the quickest thing to shut down a hair follicle in a test tube. I'll tell you that from our research. That's the quickest way to turn that sucker off, essentially. So the last thing you want to do is create a cortisol surge at the time you're doing PRP. It's just awful. And of course, why would you want to do that to a patient? It's so sadistic. So to my colleagues out there who don't use local anesthetic, just send those patients our way, and we'll take great care of them and not hurt them. And we do teach how to apply a painless ring block also in that class as well. So those are some nuanced things. That's just our basic PRP. I mean, we didn't even get into the extracellular matrix protocols. Years ago, we used biologic material. There are some very good perinatal biologics that we've used in the past. A lot of that is now under the auspices and regulation guidance of the FDA. So I would say we should focus now. If you want to use an extracellular matrix product, let's do synthetic stuff. Synthetic extracellular matrix like polidioxinone or PDO, as you mentioned, has been something that we brought to the U.S. I can't say that I invented it, but I did hear about it, before folks did, before other folks did, through my connections in South Korea and in India. And we really brought that technology to the U.S. back in, I think it was 2016, 2017, were our first PDO patients. And we showed that PDO, polidioxinone, could really stimulate a lot of hair growth in the scalp, especially when used in combination with PRP as well. So
So
there's an interesting story there.
you're placing threads of PDO in the dermal, subdermal layer, or a little more superficial, and then are you just kind of knitting it in the areas with alopecia and thinning?
So we apply PDO threads in underneath the skin, below the hair follicles, so say subdermally in the area where you would normally find the that connective tissue layer, the soft connective tissue layer. That's where we apply literally dozens, if not hundreds, of threads into the scalp during a single procedure. And I found that it creates a very spectacular regrowth of hair. And a lot of patients, in combination with the PRP, they'll last well over a year in terms of their results from the PRP if you do those two things together.
Amazing. Do you think that just drives a ton of new circulation to the scalp? Is that what's happening? The inflammation from, foreign body stimulus?
Well, I don't think it's a foreign body stimulus because, as you may know from the clinical literature, polidioxinone is absorbed very, very easily from the body, although slowly. And there's no big, tissue foreign body reaction actually going on. The inflammation markers are very, very low. So we look at markers of hair growth and hair senescence, like FGF5 and FGF7, and we see that those change in the ways that are exactly the same as if we stimulated it with minoxidil or low-level laser light therapy. So the gene expression of absorbing polidioxinone is definitely changing the gene expression of hair growth. which is really nice. And we're seeing that growth, obviously, photographically and measuring it microscopically with the AI-powered hair microscopes.
Interesting. Have you used PLLA as well for scalp, like polylactic acids?
I never have. No. We've had good results with the threads, so that's our kind of go-to thing that we use. If someone wants like even a little bit more of a boost or something a little bit more sophisticated, then we might move into exosome therapy. Exosomes today, again, under the guidance document from the FDA, can be applied topically, or we can also combine the PRP and PDO regimen, which I call PDO Grow. We can combine that with a series of TED treatments if they want.
And then let's talk for our audience. Some of the people listening are not all physicians. And what, tell us a little bit about exosomes. So exosomes are spectacular products that come from cell breakdown. And what are you doing? What is an exosome? How can we use that in our practice?
So exosomes or extracellular vesicles come from other cells. They come from cells. And actually, exosomes are just what the cells release during the course to during the course of their life to signal either near or far cells. And so, for example, like when a stem cell is placed into an area of injury, it senses what's going on in that area, and then it sends off instructions to the local zone to either increase blood flow or to reduce or increase inflammation, to improve collagen production. So, as a stem cell does its business, it's releasing these instructions into the local area. And so, if we could collect somehow these instructions from stem cells in a laboratory and then package them and send them to physicians for tissue regeneration repair, wouldn't that be amazing? And well, actually, that's what exosomes are. So exosomes are these nanovesicles. They're extremely tiny, 1/1000th the size of a cell. So in other words, if you're on a basketball court, a cell the size of a basketball court, an exosome would be about the size of a golf ball, right? So very tiny. And there are actually exosomes in all body fluids. So there's exosomes in tears and saliva and urine and breast milk and you name it. So exosomes are everywhere. The question is, what are in the exosomes and how do we use them carefully? So of course we want to know where is the tissue bank and where did they get the source cell line? Is it bone marrow? Is it adipose tissue? Is it placental cells? And so that's kind of important. What are the initial cell lines? And then how are those cell lines cared for and curated? Is it a master cell line that's regulated by the FDA? And has a folder, like the FDA has a folder on that particular cell bank and the cell line. And then under what environment are those cells placed in order to get the exosomes? And then how are those exosomes collected? And then how are they quantified? And then how are the payload determined? And so all of these different nuances that most people don't realize are really important. And so there are only a few companies that we actually trust when it comes to our exosomes and their use. So, when the exosomes come to us, obviously there's no cellular material. We're talking about microRNA, we're talking about cytokines and growth factors and things like that that are all within those exosomes. And there's literally potentially trillions of exosomes in a tiny vial that's about the size of my pinky finger that's frozen at minus 80 degrees in our cryo fridge until we're ready to use them. And then they can be applied topically to the scalp.
Now, I love how you're talking about the source. What's the source derived? How's it prepared? And also the FDA guidelines and requirements, since we technically are not allowed to really be injecting exosomes, but I see so many companies advocating for this kind of off-label use, which is going on everywhere. Are you worried at all about that? Because I see
Well,
people injecting exosomes into scalps all over the internet right now.
so I'm worried because occasionally we see these reports of exosomes being used intravenously. And of course, if they're not sterile, if they're not been prepared properly, you're going to end up with some septic patients. And unfortunately, there's no faster way to bring the FDA down on you as to hurt patients and end up being in the hospital. So I think it's important, for my friends and colleagues and anyone in the industry to approach these things with care. That we don't, you want to make sure you have a good source and good technique when applying these things topically. And that's one of the reasons why we are using them topically on the scalp with the use of the ultrasonic delivery system, like TED, transepidermal delivery. The Alma TED system is a great way to apply exosomes to the scalp without injecting them, without implanting them.
That's nice. Talk a little bit more about what is transepidermal delivery. So that's ionic diffusion of product through the epidermis down deeper to the follicle level.
So the technique uses two really important concepts or methodologies. The first concept is sonophoresis. Sonophoresis is not a new thing. It's been around for like 50 years or more. The orthopedic guys used sonophoresis, which is ultrasonic sound waves, to drive pharmaceutical products like into a joint, like let's say a knee. You want to drive, corticosteroids into or anti-inflammatories into a knee. You can use ultrasonic delivery system to do that. The other important concept for folks to know is growth factors and peptides. And if you're in the anti-aging space or rejuvenation space, you've heard about hormones and peptides being used together. Peptides are, small chains of small proteins that can have a biologic effect. And so, growth factors and peptides that are driven into this that are specific for hair growth, driven into the skin or scalp in this particular case using sonophoresis is what TED is all about, transepidermal delivery. So sonophoresis breaks up the stratum corneum. The stratum corneum is that very tiny thin layer that keeps moisture out and keeps moisture in our bodies. It's the reason why when you take a shower, you don't swell up like a sponge, or at least you shouldn't. The stratum corneum is a locked tight brick and mortar structure with tightly packed cells and lipids. But you can disrupt that temporarily with the ultrasonic sound waves. And that's what TED does. And so you prime the skin with the TED device. It doesn't hurt. It feels like vibration. It sounds like a jewelry cleaner, so it kind of makes a vibration noise. But most patients actually sleep through that process, which takes about 30 to 40 minutes. We prime the skin and then apply the serum, which contains the growth factors like VEGF and fibroblast growth factor, FGF. And then peptides like copper tripeptide, copper GHK, which is amazing, and also a thymus and beta 4 derivative called proherrin B4, as well as dozens of amino acids and a bunch of other ingredients, emollients, exfoliants, and so forth to care for the skin and to actually transmit and push that sound wave into the stratum corneum. So you get that great penetration. So all of you could treat about four or five zones, which is basically the male pattern or female pattern hair loss. It does require monthly treatment. So we do a package of four once a month for 4 months and then measure the results thereafter. So I'm
Amazing.
pretty excited because we were the first outside of the original clinical trial, which was kind of, done under closed doors, if you will, in the Chicago area, to actually have the Alma TED system here in the office. And it's been amazingly powerful. Now, it's not a new hair. So let's be honest. This is not like what a hair transplant can do. It is something, however, that is non-chemical, non-invasive, no pharmaceutical side effects, no needles, and as we say, like no drama, no trauma with TED. And so patients are really loving it. They'll do it as a stopgap. Let's say they don't want to jump into a PRP treatment. They may try the TED series first. Patients who have done PRP, but they want a little bit extra boost, will come in once a month to do the TED. I have lots of men and women that just schedule a monthly appointment for TED. Just every
Yeah,
month they come in,
just
just
do
like
the
they would do for their skin, like a facial or a massage therapy. It's a do good, feel good treatment that also, in our hands, we've seen some repigmentation of the hair. The hair tends to grow in with a little bit more of its native pigment. Don't tell anybody, especially not the Clairol people, that we're getting a little bit of repigmentation there, as well as the improved hair growth.
Well, that's amazing. I can't wait for you to discover that, how to get the gray hair to go. Which exosome brands do you feel are very reputable and trustworthy based on your extensive experience?
Yeah, so I personally, I like Kimera. I know Dr. Duncan Ross very well. He's a thought leader in the field, researcher, very diligent and dedicated on really determining what's inside those exosomes. So he's got a full printout readout on the payload and the quantity, and he's got some very unique ways to measure that, which I think will become more standard in the industry as time goes along. We also like the VITI exosomes, VITTI. Those are very good. But we do use quite a variety of exosomes and lots of others that I'm not going to mention on the air today. But we're very interested in exosome therapy. We do a lot of different types of exosomes with our patients. And so, but those are two brands that patients can trust. But remember that each of these different companies has a variety of different products. So just like your lasers come in all shapes and sizes, there's a difference between an exosome treatment that's going to cost $50 and another exosome therapy that costs $1,000 or $10,000, so there's a big difference there. And so don't think that all exosome therapy is the same, because certainly not the case.
No, certainly not. I know Plaidith makes really great exosomes for skincare
Oh yeah.
topically. And you were mentioning freeze-dried exosomes. So is that a thing now where we get exosomes that we keep? And I've been wondering too, like how long can exosomes be good for in a bottle delivered to your office and,
Yeah.
sitting around in stock?
So, Dr. Atta Bafar is one of my heroes in cardiothoracic surgery up there at Mayo Clinic. And so when I heard about Rion and the plated products, which contain platelet exosomes, I was super excited about, getting my hands on those. And I've seen some incredible wound healing results. And also, we're seeing some interesting hair growth results with those products as well. So I'm glad that you brought that up. I'm a big fan of Rion.
I love
And
Rion. Yeah, I did
yeah.
help with their initial skincare studies and showed so much improvement in inflammatory skin problems,
Oh, that's
rosacea.
so great. Yeah. I mean, look, you don't have to convince me of the power of the platelet. So if you tell me that you can concentrate the platelet exosomes and make them shelf stable, I'm all in on that. So yeah, I think Rion is onto something there. I look forward to seeing their other types of studies too, for acute MI and things like that in the cath lab,
Actually,
for
that's
our patients. So, but yeah, so the skincare is obviously, kind of, and hair care first to market. Yeah, we're seeing some incredible wound healing, is what I've seen personally with Rion, and it's just those are plated, and that's amazing, amazing technology, the shelf stable.
interesting. And we kind of glossed over PRF. So I just want your quick thoughts if there's a preference, or would you just skip over PRF and go right to transepidermal delivery?
Well, the thing about PRF is that it can be very, very useful if you have a what I would consider like a tissue defect. So let's just say you're working in the mouth at dentist and you got a tooth extraction, they've got a pocket there. PRF, just so your listeners understand, is kind of like a fibrin clot that contains also the platelets. So it becomes kind of like a lumpy, hard piece of business. It's not so easy to inject.
Yes.
You have to actually wait. If you wait too long, it basically becomes impossible to inject. And so I would assume that in the world of cosmetic and enhancements, things that are kind of like volumizing and filling would be super helpful. And maybe that would be a great use for PRF, cosmetically as a volume enhancing agent. I don't have much experience there. I do know that if you wait for the fibrin to clot, you're not going to be able to inject that into the scalp. Forget about it. But remember, we talked about extracellular matrix. These are things that kind of seem to enhance the effect or prolong the effect of platelets. So I can imagine that maybe the fibrin, if it was able to like kind of adhese with the platelets and you're able to get that into the scalp, that maybe that would provide some prolonged effect, maybe kind of dripping the platelets in over time, imagining that. But in our hands, I haven't had great success with PRF. And when I test it in my Coulter counter, I'm disappointed to see that it has a very low platelet concentration. So those are the things in our hands. There are other physicians and surgeons that think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But again, since I'm not dealing with tissue defects or volume replacement, I think PRF has a limited effect on the scalp. Unless you include that kind of scaffolding effect, because in regenerative medicine, remember that there's cells and signals and scaffolds, and sometimes you have to, in order to compartmentalize, what you're injecting, you have to think to yourself, exosomes, maybe that's a signal, the growth factors and the peptides. The scaffold, is that the PDO, the threads, or a mesh, or is it some kind of biologic tissue like placental tissue or other, tissue, or is it the, is it the platelet fibrin, the actual clotted fibrin that could be some kind of a scaffold that the body can work on over time. So, I think that there's room for all of these different interventions, but I would just, I'm always interested, when physicians say, oh, I had a great response from that. And then I ask them, well, how much, improvement in hair density did you get? Like, what were the measurements? Then they all of a sudden their eyes gloss over and they don't have a measurement for me. So, I'm all good to learn about new things, but please, do some measurements on your patients and not just, a photograph in the dark and then in the light, or light and then the dark. I mean, the photos are real, some of these photos are awful. We have a full studio
Yeah.
here at the Bauman Medical, what we call Hair Hospital, right? The Hair Transplant Hair Loss Treatment Center here. I've got a full photographic studio where we do standardized clinical photography so that we can tell exactly what's going on with the patient,
Oh,
not just having a guess.
wow. I love that you said that because it's so true. We go to these meetings, people throw up this one single image where, yeah, here's a little fuller, but have they actually done a follicle count, density measurement, any of these things? Not really. And definitely true. Maybe PRF is sort of the mesh network that then future, stem cell growth factor stem cells will come into
So
it, or PRP get into.
I just thought maybe like a platelet poor plasma, right? Which people don't, won't admit to, but like that clear gold PRP. And then maybe there's PRF is a little step above that because of the matrix, right? The fibrin matrix. And then I'm
Yes.
thinking that, high density PRP with some kind of added extracellular matrix would be
That would
maybe the next step. And then adding on exosomes or threads or things like that, could take it
be
further.
amazing.
So that's
Like
just,
a
that's just a
multiplayer
higher.
sandwich. Yeah, just building that whole stacking effect. I think that's awesome. We do a double spin, and I think to really research this, we read like 30 of the top articles on PRP. How is it prepared? Is it refrigerated? Is it spun, double spun? It's so important to be objective about it. But the science is getting so interesting. I know I would definitely want to talk about hair transplants. So let's talk about that because we have so much educating for to do. I know. Sorry for the silly beeping. We're gonna have to edit this, but this
No
computer can't shut off the alerts. I'm so sorry. But we'll
worries.
those out. So in terms of hair transplants, well, now we can transplant eyelashes, eyebrows. We're doing single unit follicle transplants. We have robots doing transplants. Tell me all the exciting things that the consumer needs to know about. The average person thinks of hair transplants like Ken doll plugs. They don't know.
So hair transplantation in its most basic form is the movement or transplantation of the hair follicle from an area where you have more than you need, which is typically the back and the sides of the scalp, into the areas where you have hair loss or hair thinning. And that permanent redistribution of hair gives a living and growing result. The problem or challenge over the years have been how we move the hair. And so in the early days, plugs, that was a round circular punch about the size of a pencil eraser, 4 millimeters, and it gave you what? A pluggy look, because all you saw were these little tufts of hair. It still helped out those patients. I mean, they now have something to comb, but from across the room, you could tell that they had a hair transplant. Not so good. And then we went to the harvesting with a strip. And so years ago, everybody and myself included were trained in strip harvesting, where you would take a long strip out of the back of the scalp, sew the gap together with stitches or staples, provide that tissue to your team of technicians for dissection, and then convert that into grafts that were then placed into the thinning or the balding area. Now we're talking techniques now. Today, we can do what we call follicular unit extraction. And so that's a minimally invasive style. It can be done, as you mentioned, robotically. It can be done manually, mechanically. We've struggled with all the different methods, I will tell you, for the past really 15 to 18 years, trying to figure out the best way to do it. And the good news is that technology has so improved so much in terms of these devices to allow us to literally pluck the individual follicles if we need it, or follicular units, those are the groups of twos and threes, out of the scalp, and allow us to really transplant a very feathery natural hairline if you use some artistry. So you have to get the follicles out. And so the minimally invasive style leaves you with no linear scar. Obviously, you could be back in the gym in 3 or 4 days. You could wear a short haircut. We can also harvest those hairs without trimming any of your existing hair at all. We don't have to shave the recipient area like you see in many places around the world of medical tourism is booming, where they just shave everything. We don't have to do that. We have very sophisticated microscopic tools that go in between existing hairs, so you never have to shave. And so this technology, combined with an artistic approach, meaning the hairline shape and design, female hairline is going to look different than a male hairline. It's going to have different patterns. Every hairline is unique and different and frames the face appropriately. And age, what we should say, and should change, should frame the face age appropriately so that you don't look like you have a teenager hairline down to here, when you're 50 years old. That's not going to look right on you. So, that technology, FUE, is something I'm very proud to have been a part of, the early pioneers. I can't say I invented that technology, but there was a time where I, did that work with a small manual tool that I invented myself, and it was tough. It was not easy. And then the devices got better. We had NeoGraft and SmartGraft, and then Artas, the robot, and other devices like Mamba and Trevellini and the Z-Graft and UGraft and you name it. And so there's so many different devices out there, and they all work different in different surgeons' hands. So these are all tools essentially that help us get the work done. But the exciting part is once you create something that looks normal and natural and it's growing in beautifully, it can really help our patients, both men and women, project a more youthful appearance, a healthier appearance, and it's really life-changing for patients. And today, the downtime is very minimal. As I said, you're back to your regular routine very quickly. The crusting and the scabbing is gone in a week. And the hair growth is coming on in about 5 months, 6 months. You have half of the result, full result in a year. And then it's lasting. It's growing on and on and on, for decades, essentially. And
For
so,
women.
yes, you mentioned eyelashes and eyebrows. You can cover scars from plastic surgery, like brow lift scars or facelift scars. We can replace sideburns if you've had plastic surgery there. If you've had scars in the nape of the neck and you can't wear a ponytail now, we can fill that in. If you've had old style surgery, like a linear harvest, but from before, and I did thousands of those before I did many, many more, tens of thousands of the other, then we can fill that in with new hair if we want.
And for women versus men, are there special considerations if you're a woman? What's the right age? When should you worry? When should you plan a hair transplant? By the time you can see visible thinning and hair loss, you've probably already lost 30, 40% of your follicles. So what age? What's the right timing?
So, well, the first thing I would say is if you're a woman with hair loss, there are not too many surgeons that are proficient in designing female hairlines, like hairline lowering procedures or even transgender, transitions, if you will. And so you just be careful out there because you can get turned down by a surgeon who will try to find any excuse not to operate on you because he just doesn't feel comfortable treating your condition. And that's kind of sad. So, your best surgeon might be not down the block, but it, may require an airplane flight. So I do recommend that you search out a practice like mine. About 40% of our patients are women. And so, but not all women are great candidates for hair transplants, of course. But again, if you're having some early thinning or shedding, even as we started our conversation today, shedding, receding, widening part line, let's get on top of it with the least invasive things first and then figure out if we need to restore the hairline down or densify some area further back, you're seeing a bald spot develop, then we can talk about whether you're a good candidate for transplants or not. But yeah, it's a viable option. Unfortunately, a lot of women get turned down for transplantation because the surgeons are just not, they don't feel comfortable. And so they'll say, oh, your donor density is very weak, or they'll make some other excuse. When actually we measure the donor density, I can show you are a great candidate potentially for a procedure. And women don't have to suffer with a high hairline anymore. This is not Queen Elizabeth's time. You can actually restore the hairline, recreate or create a new hairline in a lower position that flaunts the frame of your face, enhances your facial features, and just makes you look more aesthetically pleasing, more beautiful.
Interesting. Are there things that you can do to in increase the follicle miniaturization? I mean, aside from PRP, red light therapy, are you putting people on Propecia? Are there hormone injections? Are we
Yes.
doing, Rogaine orally?
So the missing piece of the puzzle, the thing that we had not yet talked about, is pharmaceutical interventions. And so minoxidil is kind of the OG, right? The original FDA approved topical medication. But let's just not forget that originally it was a blood pressure medication at high dose that caused a lot of hair growth on people. And that's why they decided to make it a topical. So that's the history of minoxidil. Today, we have certainly, even for the past 10 years, we've prescribed oral minoxidil. But it got super exciting about a year ago because that was the time during Hair Loss Awareness Month, the New York Times ran a front page story on oral minoxidil for hair growth. And we were inundated with floods and floods of calls. I just found out from a patient today that some of the generic minoxidil is not even available in the local pharmacies. But we've always used compounded versions of oral minoxidil. And a lot of patients say, well, why should I do that? I can just go to my pharmacy and split pills and things like that. But I'm very nervous about generic medications, and maybe it's just me, but I've found that Our results with generic medications have been more haphazard than with quality compounded versions. And that's true whether we're talking about minoxidil, finasteride, or any other treatment, even hormone therapy. So oral minoxidil can be a game changer for patients, but you've got to start low and go slow. You don't want to have side effects. So talk to your physician about the potential for side effects and how to monitor for those and how to titrate the dose so that you're not splitting pills and making mistakes doing that. Finasteride, as you mentioned, is really a treatment of choice for men for male pattern baldness because it lowers DHT, DHT being the bad guy. It's also indicated for women who are postmenopausal, maybe on hormone replacement therapy, including testosterone. So we want to block the conversion of testosterone to DHT, and finasteride does that very well. We have other patients who are using dutasteride, which is a little bit of a stronger medication. We even do dutasteride mesotherapy for some of our patients. So these kinds of therapies, we can get into the weeds, if you will. You can also do finasteride topically. So we have finasteride and minoxidil combinations. We have finasteride, minoxidil, and prostaglandin analog combinations for the scalp. We also have dutasteride topically for the scalp now. So there's so many different ways to kind of adjust your regimen based on your risk profile, what's going on at the level of the scalp, what's your typical beauty regimen, what you can tolerate in terms of therapies, and so forth.
Amazing. Do you suggest people try the micro follicle pigmentation, like tattooing, areas of dermal hair loss, microblading for eyebrows? I always worry that that damages any existing follicles. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm very nervous about microblading anywhere on the skin because it's really a traumatic attack at the level of the skin. And of course, there are providers that can produce beautiful results, and you could see it on TikTok every day, actually. But I think that there's some risk there. And of course, the tattoo or the blading really just provides a two-dimensional structure on the skin. It doesn't really give you the hair, and so. And that's the same risk of doing some kind of scalp micropigmentation or SMP, if you will, at the level of the scalp. We do provide that here in the office. It can be a miracle for people with scars. If you want to just fill in a little area that already has a bit of hair, I would say the danger zones are the hairline. Be careful. I have amazing SMP artists who are at the top tier of their game and are the teachers and trainers for SMP artists around the world at my disposal. But the average everyday SMP provider may not be able to recreate a normal hairline for you. You don't want to, end up with some weird, bizarre, permanent straight across line on your head. That's going to be just as bad with pigment as it would be with a transplant. But SMP can really be a miracle for many, many cases, especially if you're running low on donors. So, for example, a lot of our men who have had previous transplants, they've had scars in the back of their scalp from the old plug or strip harvest days, and they want to wear a shorter haircut. SMP can really be a nice lifeboat for them for camouflage, as can beard harvesting. So we do a lot of beard to scalp transplantation, not just beard transplants to make your goatee thicker, but taking the beard follicles from down under the neck where most guys don't want them anyway, and putting them onto the scalp, into the scars or into the thinning areas in the crown, away from the hairline. Is a nice adjunctive therapy. If you had told me 10 years ago that I'd be doing beard to scalp transplants every week, I would have thought you were crazy. But it's every week, one or two cases every week, we're doing so much beard harvesting. It's unbelievable.
Interesting. Wow. Well, what does the future hold? Like, I definitely have read this interesting new article in Nature where they looked at human melanocytic nevus, little moles that grow the long hairs, and
Yeah, so
sequencing
that's.
the genome of the long hairs and finding the signaling growth factor osteopontin that creates new hair follicles. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's my colleague Maxim Plikas. He's amazingly talented guy, and I've known Maxim for many, many years. Actually, he ran a website that we were a part of. I would say maybe 20 years ago when he was in his training, and I was just starting out. So I have a long history with Maxim and his team. And if anybody can do it, I'm encouraged by his team and the work that he's doing. What you're describing, of course, is a hairy nevus. And for the general listener, basically, if you've ever seen a mole growing a bunch of hair on somebody's face, that's a hairy nevus. And so, why does that mole grow this like thick, amazingly high density hair at such a hyperpigmented state? That's what Dr. Plikas is trying to figure out. And he has actually published some really interesting research on the hyperactivation of hair follicles using some of these messages, if you will. So again, cellular messages, figuring out, how to hotwire the car, as we say, to overactivate and to stimulate these follicles. He's done it in mice. As far as I know, it haven't been done yet in the human scalp, but I would bet that they're working on it. So for those of us who want to really grow a lot more hair, stay tuned. Folks like him and then the other folks that are working on hair cloning research like Stemsyn down in San Diego, those are some people to watch, at least here in the United States, who are doing some groundbreaking work.
So interesting. I read that. All my life I've thought about that one annoying hair you have to pluck, and why can't we find the genetics in that hair follicle? But now we found it.
Yeah.
We're
Scoob
getting.
three. Yeah, Scoob three is the name of the pathway, I believe, and the growth factors that he's using. So, if they can patent those things and figure out, how to apply them into into human scalp, and as long as they're safe, as well as effective, we're on board with that. So, yeah,
Yeah.
let's stay tuned. We're all gonna have to keep an eye on that. I'm keeping an eye on that research for sure. The Maxim, super smart guy, really great guy.
Well, I love that you incorporate so much biotech into your practice and into the idea of all the things we can do for the hair. What are you doing for yourself? You seem like you're a very healthy person. What supplements do you take? What are your healthy habits?
Oh, wow. So, well, my favorite biohack is gratitude, of course. So vitamin G, I start my day and in my end my day with gratitude. So, that's a free biohack, by the way. You don't have to buy that on Amazon. So yeah, I'm thankful and blessed that I have, not just a beautiful family, but also a great place to live and work here in Boca Raton, Florida, and so many, tens of thousands of patients that we get to treat, have gotten to treat over the years. So it's really been a very fun journey. And so I have a lot of reasons to be grateful and thankful. I guess years ago it was just health and wellness, and now it's biohacking, right? And so why is it biohacking? A lot of folks don't realize really what biohacking is, and so I guess we should spend a minute on that. Changing things in your environment or nutrition or activity or way that you go about life that makes an impact in your health and longevity. And I've been interested in that for a very long time. I've been a member of the American Academy of Anti-Aging for over 20 years, since 1998, actually, to be specific. And I've done a lot of interesting biohacks over the years. My health journey was not a 180, it was a slow turn. In my late 30s and early 40s, I realized that I needed to take more action if I was going to live a healthier and longer life. And so I did a number of different things. I changed my eating habits. I currently, during work days, 5 days a week, I do 18-6, what we call intermittent fasting, but it's actually time-limited feeding. And so I'll typically just have some coffee and electrolytes before a snack around, the early afternoon. I probably shouldn't eat such a large dinner as I do, but I'm a bit of a foodie and I also want to have friends. So, that's one of the sacrifices. I really am focused on my sleep. I have had an Oura ring for almost 5 years as a Gen 3. So I do track my sleep pretty carefully. I feel like I've never been a great sleeper since my internship and residency, and I don't know if it was just dysregulated at that time or, but I really focus on that. So, I try to help my patients focus a little bit more on sleep because I think it helps with hair growth as well. It knocks down stress, it improves your metabolism, makes you more resilient, improves your immunity. So, sleep is really, really important as an overall health hack and also hair growth hack. And, some of the other things I do work out twice a week. I do train pretty hard. I work out mostly with weights. I'm not so good at zone two, to be honest, mostly resistance training. Although when it gets into ski season, I do plan a very, my once a year trip with the guys. And so I want to make sure I'm in good shape and have good stamina for that. So I do change up the regimen a little bit as I get close to that. But those are some of the basic things that I do nutritionally. I've developed my own nutraceutical line specifically for hair growth. So whether it be my collagen powder under the Bowman MD brand, multivitamin, probiotic, I also take the extra biotin. I have a unique supplement called the Recruiter, which actually mobilizes stem cells out of the bone marrow. That's not something I take consistently, but I do pulse that around the time around some different times of the year. In fact, I'm so keen on health and wellness and performance that I've actually designed and implemented an entire functional medicine department in my practice. So now we have what we call Bowman Performance, and it's mainly for patients who are in the practice already or folks who come in through word of mouth. And we find a lot of dysregulation, obviously, because hair is that important barometer of health and wellness. And so we uncover a lot of hormone imbalance, especially in our women around the time of perimenopause and menopause. They may be dealing with, changes in mood or weight and things like that that they want to handle. And so I have Joe, my nurse practitioner, who interviews the patients and goes over everything. We've got Kim, who's an expert in hormone optimization, and I've got a fitness and nutrition specialist as well. So I've got a pretty robust department now to handle not just the in-house patients who are like looking for biohacking stuff, and we certainly do all of that as well, but the other patients that we come across who have these metabolic issues. And then I take it one step further. I'm really an advocate for longevity and vitality, not just living longer, but living healthier into those later years. And so I kind of have a long-term plan to be on the lookout for diseases of aging and screenings and things like that that I do, and to really prepare myself for a longer, healthier life than I thought originally we were going to have. So that's just my mindset, and that's what I do day in and day out, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I love how you're forward thinking, and I fully agree with you. Love intermittent fasting. Definitely, I'm trying to prioritize sleep more than ever. I feel like surgery and residency and training, it gives you this 30-year sleep debt that you just it takes so long to reset. And I'm learning more and more about mitochondrial health, and I'm trying to understand how to make our DNA last and replicate itself as best it can over the years. And muscle
Oh,
mass. I
absolutely.
think muscle's going to be the fountain of youth for all of us, actually.
I totally agree. There's some really good studies that show that the quantity of lean muscle mass is a direct indicator of longevity. And it becomes obviously harder to maintain muscle mass as you age. And so as we get into our 50s, 60s, and 70s, we've got to continue to lift heavy things and work out and maintain that. I think there was a study that came out about bicep circumference, and they did a bicep circumference study in these nursing homes, and they showed that the folks with the thicker biceps, I mean, that was a quick indicator of muscle mass, right? Had greater longevity and lower mortality. So, stay tuned. We're going to learn a lot more about that. I'm also very interested in personalized precision medicine. There's a lot we can do today from just a DNA test to look at different metabolic pathways, not just for hair, not that we're going to dovetail back into that, but we can look at metabolic pathways that impact hair loss, but also overall health too. And so I'm always fascinated by how much new research comes out, and some of these really cool software programs that we have now have access to can really dial down and dig deep into different things that we never even would think to look at unless you had a symptom, right? Or a biomarker on a lab test. Now we can physically go into the DNA and we say, aha, you've got two SNPs for this. You're two standard deviations away from the norm. Let's keep an eye on that. Let's do some specific testing just to make sure that we check that box.
Amazing. Is there going to be artificial intelligence used more for hair restoration and predictive value of if are you going to lose all your hair? Where should you start focusing on?
Well, AI in hair restoration actually has been around a long time. I mean, if you think about the first AI-powered instrument in hair, it was the robot, the Artis Restoration Robotics robot. It was FDA approved in 2011. And how did it work? Well, it could actually, in a shaved area, it could see the angle, orientation, and position of the hair shaft, and it made a guesstimation of how to attack that angle so that you could get the graft without human intervention. So it was the most sophisticated semi-autonomous surgical instrument on the planet. Unfortunately, today, I think that the manual tools, especially the more advanced ones, have really leapfrogged the robotics in some ways. Although there are many of my colleagues that use robotic harvesting very successfully, and kudos to them. I do feel like some of those instruments are a little bit larger than what we use now with the manual mechanical tools. And it's just, time on tissue, right? So if you're used to using a certain tool, you're obviously going to get better, like a certain tennis racket or a certain set of skis you like better, golf clubs, you're going to be better at it than, the other guy who likes those, But the other AI-powered device that we have in the practice for a number of years, a couple of years now, is called Hairmetrics. And it's a very cool diagnostic and tracking tool. We take a picture of the scalp in different areas. The photos go up to the cloud, and in about a minute comes back down with the hair counts in that area and a quantification of exactly what the quality of the hair is. So by hair diameter measurements. So you get a color readout on each area, how much red, green, and blue, or whatever it may be. So red and yellow are weaker hairs. The green and blue ones are better hairs. And so you can see graphically in like a minute what's going on in each area of the scalp. And then we can track that over time. So that's an AI-powered device that I love. We lean heavily on that because it's such a cool piece of technology, but it gives us so much data. And I'm a data freak. I love the information, on what works for our patients. And knowing the measurements really tells the whole story. There's no guesswork. It's not like, oh, I think you look better from last time. No, it's not. There's no guessing. We're measuring you.
Well, I love all the things you've said. You're absolutely brilliant. And all of the science and intelligence that you're bringing into, you've had 30 years of hair experience. So to hear it from you is such a pleasure and an honor. And I know you've educated so many people that listen to this podcast. And I want to bring so much more of what you're doing into aesthetics, because our field needs people who bring data-driven, scientifically proven mechanism of actions into how we treat patients. So
Absolutely.
yeah, congratulations on all your success and all your great ideas. Such an
Well,
entrepreneur.
thank you so much, Dr. K. It's really been great to be here with you. And as I always say, if any of your listeners or patients have any questions about hair loss, they think they might be having some hair loss, then they should go to BaumanMedical.com. Obviously, that's the website. It has thousands of pages of information that I've written personally. Some of it is from, they can also sign up for a newsletter there just to be informed twice a week on what we do and how we do it. They can also start their consultation there. And so many of my patients, about half of our patients, start their consultations virtually. That means just like what we're doing today on Zoom. We're looking at you, we're looking at your medical history, some photos that you may have sent in, and seeing and learning what's going on in those risk factors, what you've tried, what you haven't. Obviously, we can't do a measurement yet virtually, but I'm working on that. And then we can figure out from there what to do. But even if you're a listener has a question about hair loss, they can go to BaumanMedical.com/ask and just ask a simple question, and I'm happy to answer all those questions. Or just search me out on all the social media platforms. You'll find me there. Plenty of videos and such to watch and to learn about what we do and how we do it here.
Amazing. You guys have to check him out. Everyone, check out Dr. Alan Bauman. And that's it for now, guys. You can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay, doing amazing things with people's faces. And check out our website too. It's beautybydrk.com. I'm going to send you some of my stem cell growth factor skincare product, and I think you're going to love it. And I'll be
Oh,
in Miami. I'm coming out to Miami soon. I'm going to drive by Boca Raton and come and visit you.
please, please come on by. We'll have a great time.
All right. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.